This is the Game Misconduct Podcast with Don LaGreca.
And welcome to the Wednesday edition of Game Misconduct. I'm Don LaGreca. Wednesday means Leah Hextall, and she's nice enough to join us here again on Wednesday. How are you?
I'm great, Don. How are you doing? Have you recovered from all the turkey?
I have. Good. I've recovered from the turkey, and now because American Thanksgiving was so late in November, it's a quick transition to now the panic of trying to get all your Christmas shopping done. So you seem like a very conscientious person that's probably have all your presents not only bought but wrapped already.
I have a few done, but, you know, just so you know, you can send me anything you'd like online
okay.
for my present. I'm trying to make it easy for you, so since you seem to be behind a bit. But
yes.
I will accept it even after Christmas if you need to wait until then to get me a good... You guys don't even have Boxing Day down there, do you? On the
No, we do not, but I am familiar with it.
Sales. Yeah.
But as an American that loves hockey and trying to be all things Canadian, very much aware of Boxing Day, but we do not celebrate that here in the States, but not a lot of celebrating going on in New Jersey. Just an awful start, and we've speculated it, you know, basically since their slow start to the beginning of the season. John Hines just could not survive a 7-1 loss to the Buffalo Sabres. You just got the sense while that game was going on, 3 goals in the first 7 minutes, 5 goals in the first period, that this was going to be a game that was probably going to be his last one. Nazardine takes over on an interim basis, but just your thoughts on John Hines, who was actually, believe it or not, of the 9 teams in the New York metropolitan area, John Hines was the longest tenured head coach of the 9 teams, believe it or not. It's now Kenny Atkinson of the Brooklyn Nets, who's been there all of 3.5 years. But just your thoughts on the New Jersey Devils laying the hammer down on John Hines.
Well, first of all, remind me never to be a head coach in the New York State area.
Oh, yeah.
They don't have a long life. And really, that's, I think, part of this, Don, is the fact that a reason that coaches in your area is because there is that nature from the fans to have great expectations, even perhaps when their team that the roster provides is not necessarily a team that should have great expectations. And we've spoke of this before. I really looked at the Devils as not being where they are right now necessarily. I understand that the fan base would look at it and see the PK Subban acquisition. You see that they add Wayne Simmonds. They have the number one overall draft pick. And it looked like this was a year where they should make some improvements. But the fact is that everything unraveled, and it started in net, unfortunately, with the goaltending situation and one of the best hockey people I know in Corey Schneider, but just couldn't stop the puck. And then it goes from there. And John Hines is just, quite frankly, I don't know if necessarily he deserved this fate, but what other choice do you have? I mean, when you suffer a 7-1 loss to Buffalo in that fashion that you just spoke of, you have a fan base, as you've told me before, they jacked up the ticket prices.
Yeah.
There was expectations from the fans to have a better product on the ice. When your fan base starts to, you know, make their voices heard, stop buying tickets, or show their displeasure, the organizations do have to be held accountable to the fan. And really, what other move are they going to make? It is always the coach that goes first. But I don't necessarily know if, you know, this is the solution. I look to the similarities in Toronto. I think Toronto probably has more talent than the New Jersey Devils have, but I don't necessarily believe that this is on the coach. I believe that this is a culture change that needs to happen with the players within the room. And, you know, you saw it with the Leafs last night. They lose last night. They get lit up by the Flyers. And Austin Matthews, their star player, one of the stars in the NHL, comes out and says, "We quit on our goaltender. We quit on our starting goaltender who's had to play almost every game because we don't have a backup." What kind of team is that? And when you hear a player, a star player, mention that, that means something's going on in the room. And for the Devils, I mean, you look at the fact that the goaltending unraveled. That means that the rest of the team might not have the confidence in front of their goaltender, which is a huge thing, confidence. Confidence is everything for teams. Taylor Hall is playing under this cloud of, am I staying? Am I going? Am I going to be traded? That creates uncertainty within the room. And then how tough this must be for Jack Hughes as a young player coming into the league and experiencing this type of culture right now. Is it best for him to be here even? Should he have been down in the minors to avoid this? There's all sorts of things going on in New Jersey, but it's a bit of a mess, I will say, and I don't think that firing the coach is necessarily going to fix it, but I really don't know what else they could have
done. Right, because you've got P.K. Subban, who's got averaging 22 minutes a game, and he's got 5 points. You know, Taylor Hall's got 3 goals. He's playing on the third line. So I do think there is some responsibility for whoever the coach is to try to get the most out of his players, right? We as broadcasters get a chance to vote for the Jack Adams Trophy for Coach of the Year, and I always look at, what did the coach do to get the most out of his players? What team overachieved? I always look at that as a coaching thing. Whether that's right or wrong, that's just kind of the way I look at it. So as much as it's unfair that John Hines got fired, who else do you blame for players underachieving? You're not trading P.K. Subban. You may trade Taylor Hall, but that'll be because he's a free agent, not because he's underachieving. So you can't get rid of the players. It's just easier to get rid of the coach. But here's a question for you. Because we are starting to see a tide turn where how players feel about things is important. Coaches that have a heavy hand, disciplinarians, that doesn't seem to work anymore for the millennial player. If you're the Devils, if you're Ray Shiro, do you go to Taylor Hall and say, Taylor, who should I bring in as coach to keep you here? I mean, would you take that chance of having him decide who the next coach of the team is just to try to keep this star player here? I don't feel comfortable doing that, but is that something that maybe Ray Shiro has got to think about doing?
I agree with you that I don't feel comfortable with that either, because that's so much input from a lone player that, to your point, you don't even know is going to be a part of the future of your franchise. But does it matter if he's going to be a part of the future of your franchise to take his input? Because the fact is, Taylor Hall has seen multiple coaches. He's been in multiple systems because of what went on in Edmonton. I mean, they had a revolving door of coaches. He's seen many different approaches, and he is one of those players that he's not right out of junior. He's had some years in the league. He's a Hart Trophy winner, and he's a talented player that plays the type of game in today's NHL. So his input, to your point, on could be very valuable, as could others. But that would be a very big shift to have a general manager go to players and ask for their input, because I quite frankly don't really know if that's ever been done within the National Hockey League. But I agree with you. We are really seeing a change in direction in the conversation when it comes to what I call this new regime of players.
Sure.
They ask more questions, too. They don't want to just be told what to do, because they have so much skill that they want you to explain to them, well, why am I doing this? Whereas before, players would just do what they were told, even the most talented ones, because that's how you got, you know, trained throughout from the time you were 5 all the way up the ranks to the professional game. That's not the case anymore with these young players. So I, you know, it's a really great question. I mean, the part of it though is, you know, if you go, it's how much onus you put on the input you get. It can't be your only decision marker. But I don't think necessarily it's a horrible thing to walk into your room as a general manager and say, what do you guys need to be successful before we go out and do this? It's a great conversation. I think that's a really great question, Don.
Well, think about it. We have seen players get coaches fired before. I mean, that has happened. And I'm not saying that it necessarily happened here, but we just had a conversation how we both agree that it's not completely John Hines' fault. That you can't get rid of the players, you got to get rid of the coach. So in essence, the players got the coach fired by the way that they played. They were not playing for John Hines. It forced the Devil's hand to let him go. If you are going to allow the players, whether it's out front asking for it or just being dictated by their play, allow them to get the coach fired, well, then doesn't it make sense to have them have input on who replaces them? Otherwise, you're chasing your tail, right? Because you keep bringing in guys that you want, but if the players don't want them and don't react positively to it, then you lose games, fire coaches, bring other guys in. So whether it's asking them directly and then honoring their request or making them part of the process, I think you've got to do that. Because they're the ones that are playing. They're the ones, with the exception of Hall, that are under long-term contracts that you're building around these players. They should have a say in some way, shape, or form of the direction that the franchise is going in. You're getting the coach fired, so why not get them part of the hiring process?
And you just stated a very important word, the direction and that the franchise is going in. It's not necessarily going in and saying to Taylor Hall, give me a name of who I should hire. It's more about identifying as a group, what do these players need to be successful? And I agree. I think that kind of input, you know, a lot of times the general managers don't sit down with the players because the coach, they want to make sure that the coach is the one in charge. They don't sit down with the players until the exit interview at the end of the season. Well, by that time, it's a little too late for a team like the New Jersey Devils, if they're going to make a shift before the season ends and go out and try to find a coach and, you know, get the interim title off. So it's kind of, to me, I don't mind the idea of sitting down with players now and saying, what wasn't working and what needs to happen in order to shift? Because so much of this game, as I just stated, is mental and confidence. And if the players don't have that, they're not going to perform. Yeah. And, you know, I think that might be, when you talk about direction, it might be the direction in which franchises start to go when it comes to making decisions is including the player's voice more.
Yeah, that's something you got to do. Maybe not asking who do you want to be the coach,
exactly.
But tell us what kind of coach you think works for you, what coach can get the most out of your game, and then trying to find that guy. So it'll be interesting. There are some, I think, potential coaches that aren't available now that could be available at the end of the season, right? I mean, right now, Mike Babcock's available. I'm not sure that's a fit in New Jersey, both financially and with the young players that they have on the team. But maybe John Tortorella becomes available at the end of the year. Maybe Peter Laviolette becomes available at the end of the year. So I'd be interested with a Devil team that's probably not going to the playoffs anyway. They're in last place, and they lost last night even after the coaching change to a Vegas team that is starting to get hot now with four straight wins, that maybe they're better off being patient and waiting till the end of the year rather than trying to find a replacement immediately.
I think that would be, just from the outside looking in, that would be what I would suggest their strategy is going to be. To me right now, there's a lot of decisions to be made in New Jersey, and the biggest one is around Taylor Hall. I mean, that is a really pivotal move for them, depending on what happens. Is he going to stay here, or is this going to end up being a trade bait? And to me, it more and more seems, I feel that, you know, Taylor Hall's days in New Jersey are coming to an end. I think he's going to be dealt. I think the player has been very quiet about it, which is very respectful of the organization. But with the way everything is going there, I cannot see him returning. And I think that Ratio has to go out and get the worth for him. Although he hasn't been playing up to his Hart Trophy expectations that people have for him now. But again, I rear that back to what's going on in New Jersey. So
yeah.
I think they will stay put for now, because I agree with you. Why not wait till the end of the season and see what's out there? Because you really don't know. And it's not just at the NHL level. It's also doing your due diligence at the American Hockey League level. There's a lot of very successful coaches down there. I mean, we look at Toronto, and I'm not saying that they're the marquee of it, but Sheldon Keefe obviously has his winning percentage. You can't argue with it.
Yep.
From his junior days into his AHL days, one of the best coaches out there when it comes to young players. Perhaps looking at the American Hockey League level and viewing some of the coaches down there and seeing if those might be some candidates that would fit better with the type of players that you have on your roster right now in New Jersey.
All right, so feistiness last night in San Jose. If you stayed up late to watch it, Capitals beat the Sharks 5-2, but you saw Wilson get into it with Thornton, and of course the big play was the Evander Kane elbow to Gudas, and there's not a lot of people that are going to feel bad for Gudas because he's hated around the league for sure, but that doesn't make it right that Evander Kane, who has already been suspended at the beginning of this year for an incident that took place in the preseason, that he shouldn't be disciplined in some way. Now, he did get a 5-minute major, was kicked out of the game for taking the game misconduct. Do you think there'll be further discipline to Evander Kane?
Well, Peter DeBoer, their head coach, definitely feels that there shouldn't be further discipline. He's like, he received the major and the game, and there shouldn't be any supplemental. It's going to be interesting, because the part that's missing, if you just see it on a highlight reel, is that Kane was responding to a little bit of a gesture by Gudas prior to that. So it was a reactionary elbow. It is still, though, to the head. And again, we go back to the fact that if the NHL is serious, which they have stated they are, about removing those type of headshots from the game, especially unnecessary ones where a player maybe isn't expecting it, then they would have to take a look at it. I mean, especially, it's not just about the 3-game suspension that Kane had in the preseason for the physical abuse of the official, but he also got a 1-game suspension in the playoffs. Probably would have been more in the regular season in 2018
sure.
for cross-checking. That's another very aggressive play. So to me, this is a player, if I'm player safety, that's looking at this player saying, you're not learning. You're not learning that reactionary is not allowed in this league. So I think that they, you know, it could be something, but for some reason, I don't think it's going to be done. And the reason why is the player that it was initiated with, and that's Radko Gudas.
That's true.
I really don't believe, because of his history, if this was to, and again, this goes back to, you know, not having the consistency. If this was maybe an Alexander Ovechkin or a Sidney Crosby, probably going to get a phone call. But because it's Gudas, I don't necessarily know if Kane will receive any card. And he did get the major and the game.
Right.
That is a penalty. That's a big penalty.
Right. Now, the game, it came late, so it wasn't like you can say that the game in which he was kicked out of, that it was impactful, because it wasn't like it was the first 30 seconds of the game. It came at the end of a game that was pretty much already decided. The other thing, too, and I do think that Kane deserved to get the major, but was the head targeted, or was it more towards the shoulder and it kind of rode up? Now, I do think, just like with a stick, you have to be responsible for where your elbow goes. But since we get so caught up in the area that was targeted, could you make the case that Kane was not targeting the head?
I think you absolutely could. I watched it a few times, and, you know, Radko is also, Gudas is also moving at the same time that it occurs. I mean, there's all sorts of things to look at. And I have to say the one thing, I know that player safety gets it a lot, but when they do show the videos after as to why a player is suspended, it's really important. If people don't watch them out there, they should, because they really do a great job of articulating the direction, if another player was moving, why they make the decisions they do because of the play. The question I ask is this a hockey play? Because that's what the player safety department often asks. Is this a hockey play? I would suggest it wasn't a hockey play, and even though if it wasn't intentional, it did hit the head, and that's why I think they're going to take a look at it, and there could be supplemental discipline.
All right, we mentioned this last week, that whole line of demarcation with the American Thanksgiving, and if you're in the playoffs, then you're likely in it at the end of the year. Well, Troy was nice enough to go back a few years to see if that still holds up. He went back to the 2013-2014 season, so over the last 6 years. All right, so in 14, 13 of the 16 made it. The next year, 15, 13 of the 16, then 12 of the 16, then back to 13 of the 16. But over the last couple of years, in 2017-18, 2018, and 2019, it was only 11 of the 16. Now, the percentage is still very high. So the teams that are in the playoffs right now could feel pretty comfortable. The percentages are on their side. But it's still five teams that were in the playoffs on American Thanksgiving that did not make it. So it is starting to change a little bit. Any theories on why, or is it just one of those things?
Well, first of all, was it Troy who did all this work for us?
Well, that's what Troy claiming. He says, here's the unofficial stat for the Thanksgiving top 16.
Yeah, well, good work by Troy. Listen, it is still a high percentage, but my thoughts on that is just the fact that I think there's more parity in the league than there ever has been. I mean, you know, even looking at the standings this year, Don, I mean, look at how close everything is. I mean, we're talking about the Montreal Canadiens. Everybody's writing them off. They were on an eight-game skid. They finally snapped it last night. But the fact of the matter is, even with that eight-game skid, they are 1 point out of being in the playoffs through their division. 1 point.
Right, because
1 point, because it's so jam-logged that I can understand why the numbers are what they are, because I do believe that there's parity. I do believe, because of the shootout and the point system, that you can go on these longer skids. Or, more importantly, if you get even like a solid 10-game win streak in a season, you're still in it. Even if you go on to lose so many other games, because the fact is you're getting those three-point games now. So I think that has done something to perhaps curb that statistic.
And, you know, you go back to the Montreal thing, and everybody, I'm sure you up in Canada heard it even more than we did down here about, oh, this is the first eight-game losing streak for Montreal since 1940. Well, when they lost eight in a row in 1940, they didn't get any points. Mm-hmm. This Montreal team still got 3 points in the eight-game losing streak. So, you know, so they were able to kind of sustain, not that you want to lose eight in a row, but they did get 3 points in the standing. So it wasn't like all those games were a complete waste of time. And that was a nice win against an Islander team that it kind of slowed down a little bit, but still very good. And I thought they withstood a rush late, because the Islanders did make that 3-2 late, but Carey Price, I thought, was good at the end of the game, and they got the empty netter from Weber. But Montreal's just a very interesting test case of a team that you can't struggle more than they have. I mean, they lost to New Jersey. They just fired their coach. The Devils' last win was in Montreal against the Canadiens. But yet they find themselves to be a playoff team.
Yeah, the Habs have lost to Detroit here. I mean, over this slip, I mean, they've been absolutely dreadful. They've got the third worst goals against in the NHL, giving up almost 4 per game. The only two teams that are worse, to your point, are New Jersey and Detroit.
Right.
And you can't get any lower than that. But yet, 1 point out of the playoff spot right now. 1 point
through
their division.
Yeah, and
even a wild card. It's through their division.
No, right. And so they've got a chance to be there. Toronto's now falling out of the playoffs, and we had the conversation last Wednesday about, you know, teams that are on the outside and will they make it, and you still kind of believed in Nashville. It hasn't been a great week for them since we last talked. Lost again last night to Tampa. I mean, do you still believe Nashville? Here they sit, now, you know, not wildly out of it, 29 points, where the second wild card team's got 32. And they do have 2 games in hand on Vancouver because they've only played 27 games. And they're the only non-playoff team, Leah, that has a plus goal differential. So there's some stats there that tell you that they're still alive. I'm not feeling it. Are you still feeling it?
You know, for me, it's just because of the horses that they have. I mean, you look at the players that they have, that defense and up front, and, you know, they do have goaltending when it's delivering, and they should have all the pieces of the puzzle in order to get this done. I still feel, because, you know, as you just mentioned, they're literally 2 wins and they're in a playoff spot. You know, so it's just so jam-locked right now, and it's something that I actually heard several coaches, including Paul Maurice here with the Winnipeg Jets, speak to when he was asked, because he was asked at American Thanksgiving last week about, you know, being in a playoff position right now, and if we want to talk about a team that, how are they doing it, the Winnipeg Jets are one of them right now. But the fact is that he said, look at the difference between the first team to the last team. You know, you've got like 5-6 points. That's nothing, he said. He goes, it's so close right now that he believes that really any team in this league, besides maybe a handful, could be in the playoff picture at any given day.
See, that's a glass half full way of looking at it, but I look at it the other way. Yes,
you're a New Yorker.
Well,
that's
no,
why.
But think about it. But I have some logic behind it. Mm-hmm. Oh, I'm only 6 points out. But you just mentioned before about how many 3-point games there are. So when I'm 6 points out, oh, I can just win a couple of games here and I can be right back in it. But the team I'm chasing after could still get points and losses, where instead of picking up 2 points, I'm only picking up 1 point. You know, so there's points to be had for all the teams that are above me as well. So even though I could win 3 in a row, I'm right back in it. But what did the teams do that are above me? And the problem with Nashville is Calgary, Minnesota, San Jose, or all teams that are ahead of them. So that's a lot of teams that have to lose in regulation, and not many teams, you know, lose that consistently in regulation.
No, you're absolutely right. But I just feel like in respect to Nashville, I feel that they are a team that could drive the bus and get up there. But I also feel like Calgary should be performing better than they are. But they have obviously had a very tough go of it over the last few weeks. But Minnesota, I mean, you just mentioned Minnesota. The work that's going on there, you know, another 10-game point streak, 4 straight wins. I mean, they don't have, you look at that team on paper, I mean, the fact they're getting it done right now, there's some, what I find interesting right now, Don, is that there are some teams, to your point, I would have thought Nashville would be in, you know, through their division right now. But there are teams right now that have kind of come out of the gate that I wasn't expecting to be doing this well this season. And that actually makes it kind of fun.
Are you ready for some tweets?
Sure, why not?
Okay, Forever TH asks the question, are the Leafs in a position to where in the offseason they need to trade one of the big contracts away to save some cap space and fill the defensive need?
I can understand why they might feel this, the tweeter might feel this, but as long as Kyle Dubas is the general manager of that team and that is not going to change anytime soon, that will not occur. His big thing was getting those boys all locked up at the sacrifice of his defense, but he doesn't seem to feel that the defense is necessarily as much of a problem. So I would say no, you're not going to see those trades, especially now that Babcock is out and he has Keith in there, who's his coach, who has a very similar mindset that skill wins no matter what, and I think they will be focused much more up front. If the Leafs need to do anything, they need to find a backup goaltender, because Freddie Anderson cannot play at the rate he's playing.
No. He's just playing all the time. Aaron says, what can you say about the job Paul Maurice has done despite losing four of his top five defensemen? He has Morrissey and nobody else of great value playing lockdown defense versus quality offensive teams. And with Leah so close to the situation, is there an update on Bufflin?
All right, so this is what I'm going to tell you. He's absolutely right about the job Paul Maurice has done. I just did a segment on it for a radio station I contribute to yesterday. In my opinion, Paul Maurice, you talked about it, Don, about getting the most out of your players, and that's what brings on the Jack Adams conversation. I think that Paul Maurice is a front runner for right now. As the tweeter said, lost the entire right side of their D. Doesn't, you know, besides Morrissey, that was their big horse. I will say this, for those of you who are familiar with Neil Pionk, who we received, the Winnipeg Jets received in the trade with Jacob Trouba, he has turned into a sensational defenseman for the Winnipeg Jets this season. He's really getting the job done. He's playing on that top pairing with Morrissey. But the results that Maurice has been able to do, and a big part of that, I think, is that players understand this year is that, you know, we have skill, but we lost a lot, and we're going to have to work harder than everyone. And there can't be any divas. They had some issues in their room last year to the point where they went out and they made some trades for some quality players at the trade deadline that weren't really going to play for them, and a Matt Hendricks just to come in and help their room. So they talked about ruffled feathers at the end of the season. That seems, from the tone from the top for Maurice, to be gone. And he has really done a strong job, as has his entire coaching job, of getting the best results out of the players by the players adapting to their roles. Right now you have Blake Wheeler, a winger, playing second-line center because Brian Little's injured. They have this huge amount of injuries throughout their team for the entire season. You also have people like Matt Perreault playing his off wing without complaining. All the players seem to have bought in to this connective mentality, and right now I don't know if I've seen them play more of a complete hockey game than they did last night against Dallas and San Jose the other day. As for Dustin Bufflin, when I talk about those injuries, that's one of the things to give Paul Maurice credit to. He hasn't had his full roster since day one because of the unexpected absence of Dustin Bufflin. As of right now, it has been dead silent from the team and Bufflin's side because they are going to be going into arbitration. So we're not going to really hear anything likely until this is all decided because of the legal matters that are coming.
Jake says, is there a better team than the Bruins right now? 14-point lead in their division, a plus 36 goal differential. Pastrnak leads the league in scoring with him and Marchand top four in points. To add to the goalie tandem has been incredible this year. It is amazing, Leah, how well they've done. It's basically what we saw from Tampa last year, right?
It absolutely is, and I would say I don't think there's a better team in the National Hockey League right now than the Boston Bruins. And he mentioned that goaltending tandem. I think that's going to be so important that they're able to platoon the workload. We talked about workload before. Jaroslav Halak getting that 24-save shutout, his second of the season. He started 11 games. He's won 7 of them and only lost in regulation once. So that means Rask has only had to play 17 of the 28 games so far, which is huge because that gives Rask that ability for load management and to get that rest so that when they do head into the playoffs that he's ready and he's fresh. So I just, this Boston team, what I love about them, Donna, and I don't know how you feel, is that they feel like the Bruins. They feel not necessarily like the big bad Bruins of the day, but they play Bruins hockey. You know, you look at the guys they locked up, like a Charlie Coyle, he's a Bruin. You know, they signed him to that 6-year extension, and he's got the talent, but they're all a little bit of pests. They're not afraid to get in your face. They've got an aggressive style. They have some swagger to them, and I love all of that. And I think that really is coming into why they're having so much success along with that talent. But I got to tell you, it has been a treat to watch David Pastrnak this season.
Yeah, he's been unbelievable. I got to see him Black Friday where the Rangers blew that 2-goal lead. He is just so special. There's no weakness. And you talked about culture. They've got the culture there in Boston. Yeah. Now their last cup was 2011, but they've been consistently good. Everybody knows their role, right? And they've sprinkled in youth with veterans. I mean, you can have a young kid like McAvoy play with a 42-year-old in Zdeno Chara. The goaltending's been outstanding. The coaching has been terrific. And listen, I could have said the same thing about Tampa last year. Because Tampa had been a consistent playoff team. So no one saw them getting swept by Columbus. I would be just as shocked if Boston went out early too. I mean, anything can happen, yeah. But unless there's injuries that just, and listen, they're suffering from injuries now. Bergeron hasn't played. You know, Krejci was out for a while, so it's not like they haven't faced adversity.
And the other aspect of that is I think you hit it with the fact that, yes, their last cup was in 2011, but they went to the final last year. They went to the final in 2013 in the abbreviated lockout season. But this is a team that has a lot of core players that have been there, done that. To your point, they have that new, great, young, fresh talent. They have stars, like full-out stars on their team. But then they also have those third, fourth-line guys, those supporting units, which really win cups. But the biggest thing is I think that all those players got a taste of it last year. They were so close. And what that does, especially in a room like the Bruins and with that organization, I think it just fuels them so much to be like, we were that close, we didn't do it. And I think there's a bit of a chip on the shoulder.
Yeah.
Say, listen, we're going to get back there, and this time it's ours. It's nobody else's this year. We are taking the cup. And that's the kind of Bruins mentality that I think has really permeated that entire group this season.
Well, more championships for Boston. Yay.
Yeah, because that's what they need.
Leah, great stuff as usual. We'll talk to you next Wednesday, okay?
Sounds good, Don.
All right, and send me your size and anything that you happen to need for Christmas so I can get your shopping out of the way.
I will do that, sir. And I look forward to it.
All right. Thank you so much. Enjoy the week. Only four games in the NHL, but some of them very, very interesting tonight. What a tough spot for the Leafs. Home against the Avalanche. Avalanche put up a touchdown against Chicago the last time they played, and the Leafs nearly gave up a touchdown last night against Philadelphia, so that's a tough spot. I would bet the over big time in this one because I think there's going to be a lot of goals scored there. Blues and the Penguins, that's going to be the NBC Sportsnet game. Blues, of course, every bit as good as they were last year at the end of the season. Pittsburgh starting to warm up here without Sid the Kid, but they're still playing great hockey at 14-9-4. Senators and the Oilers at 9:30. The Senators put up a good fight, but you know now they're starting to dip under 500, five games under NHL 500 against an Oiler team that split that home and home against Vancouver over the weekend. And then at 10 o'clock, the Capitals and the Kings as Washington continues that Western swing, played in San Jose. Could be a bit of a tough spot. Usually, the Rangers are going to go through the same thing. They're going to be out west starting Sunday against Vegas, and then they go to L.A., then to San Jose, and then back down to Southern California against Anaheim. Well, kind of a similar situation for the Capitals where you play the Sharks, and then you go back down to take L.A., and then they'll take on the Ducks. So they do get the closeness of the L.A. Anaheim experience, but in a second of back-to-back, San Jose and L.A. kind of a pain. So the Capitals at 24-5 and probably not getting talked about as much as they should because everybody's talking about the Bruins. But if there's clearly a second-best team in the league, it's Washington. And, boy, that would be a heck of a conference final matchup. But if it had happened, and it can happen because of the fact that they're both in different divisions, unlike last year with Boston and Tampa being the two best teams and look like they're going to be on a collision course for the second round before Tampa got swept in round number one, we at least could be set up to where the two best teams in the conference could play each other in the Eastern Final if indeed the Capitals and Bruins can go that far. So Friday will be another big show because we'll have a weekend, the preview, and we'll have our top five of the week. Best way to get in touch with me always at Don LaGreca, hashtag Game Misconduct. So enjoy the day off tomorrow. We'll be back with you again on Friday to set you up for the weekend. And again, if you want to tweet the top five, you could do that as well as we'll give you the top five for the week. This was the Wednesday edition of Game Misconduct.
Thanks for listening to the Game Misconduct Podcast. Looking for more Don LaGreca? Hear him on the Michael K. Show weekdays from 3 to 7 p.m. on 98.7 ESPN in New York and worldwide on the ESPN app. And don't forget to subscribe to the Game Misconduct Podcast wherever you get your podcasts.